I'm Kevin.
And I'm Stephanie.
And during our marriage, we have dealt with an electrocution, a brain tumor, brain surgery.
Then doctors telling us that children were not in our future, followed by miscarriage, and then Kevin's cancer diagnosis.
However, today, we live a life completely healed and restored with three healthy children who doctors said were not possible. And we're here to tell stories that inspire, give hope, and brighten your day. Welcome to
Tell Us a Good Story.
This episode is being presented to you by Storyside Church, where your story matters. At Storyside Church, they believe God always writes a good story.
You can join them for church online each Sunday morning on their Facebook page or watch their entire library of prior services on their YouTube channel, Storyside Church.
Steph, are you ready to have fun?
Oh, I'm ready to laugh. I have so many questions for him. I'm so excited.
Well, friends, our next guest is in his fifth decade as a professional comedian. He recently filmed his third comedy special for Dry Bar Comedy, which has now surpassed 700 million views on Facebook and YouTube. And his second book, titled Are We There Yet?, was released on September 5th and immediately became an Amazon number one bestseller on the same day. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to Tell Us a Good Story, Mr. Jeff Allen.
Ah, Jeff, hey. I'm so excited.
It's nice to be here. I'm bleeding to death, but that's okay. Don't worry about it. I'm fine.
It's totally fine. No big deal.
Well, for listeners who are not viewing this, Jeff came on here, the Zoom call with us, and was bleeding and is blaming it on his wife. But actually, I believe it is, you cut yourself shaving.
New razor.
Every time I put a new, I should have known better. Hopefully it'll stop before I, you know, pass out.
Yeah. Well, thank you for saying yes to us.
Hey,
Jeff.
I have a question.
Yes.
700 million views.
No kidding.
That might be a little high. I the last I heard it was at 400, and I don't know. I don't keep track of these things. So if the publicist sent it to you, it may be true. I don't know.
What's going through your mind, though? That's phenomenal.
Well, it's amazing to me at my age. I've been around since 1978, and it's interesting reading the comments on Facebook and Instagram. They go, where did he come from? And he's old, so did he just start, you know, late in life? You know, I had a 25-year body of work to put out there. So when I hired a social media guy, he says, man, you're one of the best clients I've had. He says, most guys are just starting out. They get a video that goes viral and then they got nothing to follow it up with. But it's interesting because some of the videos are 20 years old and I have a full head of hair. And and you read the comments, oh, he's old now. This isn't him. He's old. He's bald. You know, they're brutal. I had one guy say I was Tim Allen's father. I go, that's not kind. You know, but I looked at, first of all, he's 3 years older than me. But do I look that much older than him? You know, I don't know.
Well, you're probably the busiest you've ever been with everything going on right now.
It's amazing. It's interesting. We have, I told my manager when things clicked, I said, Tammy will determine, my wife will determine the number of dates I take based on the book we just wrote. You know, we had some issues. I was in an IRS audit and he says, how many days are you on the road? I said, I don't know. It's on the sheet. And I looked, it was 228 days.
Oh my gosh.
It just is a balancing act between how much I am gone and how much she misses, you know. And I've often said that God gave me the right woman. You know, not many wives could live the life we've lived as far as the travel and not being home. So
as a comedian, does your wife think you're funny? Because as a normal guy, my wife does not think I'm funny at all.
Oh, he's not funny. There's a reason. He's just not funny,
Well,
Jeff.
It's funny to me. Because I fell in love with her laugh. I opened the book with, I proposed to her. I met her at a comedy club, and she was a waitress. And I fell in love with her laugh before I even met her or saw her. I just, 37 years ago, she was a smoker, and smokers have the best laughs to comic. You know, when you cannot get oxygen into your lungs, that's music to a comic. You know, and the gagging, gasping, wheezing that annoys the rest of the population is a joyful symphony of noise to a comic. So I'm on stage and I hear the, you know, and I'm like, that's a woman. I got to meet her. So I think she thought I was funny. And then after being married to me for a while, it, you know, she wasn't laughing a whole lot. And then now I think I make her laugh. She makes me laugh probably more than I make her laugh.
Is it hard for her or your sons to hear jokes about them on stage or like their personal life? Does it bother them? Are they like, Dad, please don't say this.
Don't joke about this.
Don't
Dad.
Say this.
Not at all. It was interesting. They would fight about who the story was about. They would argue.
Really?
That was about you. No, that was about you. That was, you did that. And you know, like the camping story I did years ago, my son went to camp. And Tammy packed him with 7 pair of underwear, all folded up. And he came home a week later with 6 folded, clean pair of underwear. I go, you didn't change your underwear for a week? He goes, no, no, we swam every day. And I go, I can't imagine how much chlorine you need with 32 adolescent boys to keep that. It was like a salmonella pool or I don't know. But they argued. He goes, that was about you. He goes, Aaron said, I never went to camp. And Ryan goes, well, that one was about me. So,
Jeff, what was your first time on stage like?
Awful.
Did you bomb?
Oh, awful. My brother was a musician, and he was doing a show in Chicago. I was 16, and some comics opened for him. And I thought, gosh, I would love to do that, but how do you do that? I mean, it wasn't like today where they have, you know, schools and stuff you can go to. And it's not like high school had a table set up for stand-up comics for career day, you know, so I just put it in the back of my mind if it ever comes across. So 6 years later, I was working at a jewelry company in Chicago. And after they're setting up the show, some guys go, we're going to go to the Comedy Cottage. And I said, what's that? That's where comedians get up. And you know, I was like, whoa, wow, where's this? So I hung out there for 3 months before I worked the courage up to try. I was there every night for 3 months, hanging at the bar and meeting the guys and anyway, open mic night, Thanksgiving night, 1978. I go up on stage. Everybody comes out because they know me, and now they've been waiting for me. They knew I wanted to do it. And I drew a blank. I didn't prepare. I didn't know you prepared stuff. I didn't prepare a thing. I just thought comics went up and talked about their day. And I had done some magic, so I tried to do a magic trick. My hands were shaking. I dropped everything. I mean, it was awful. I went home. Tears. I cried. I was humiliated. And two nights later, I was back Sunday night for an open mic night, and the MC came over to me and said, you're going to have to make some sense tonight. What you said Sunday, we're still trying to figure out what you said Thursday night. You know?
So yeah. What was the first joke then that killed? Do you remember?
I'll tell you the first joke I got a laugh with. I had a 68 VW Bug. And I had to park it on a hill because I couldn't afford to change the start, get a starter for it. So I had to park it on a hill, run it down the hill, hop in, pop the clutch and go. So one night it broke down about a mile from the club. And I ran the last mile to make my set. I walk in, I'm sweating. Oh. I'm angry. I hit the stage and I just start spewing about this VW Bug. And I go, anybody own one of these? I bought 3 because I couldn't believe what pieces of garbage the first 2 I got were. If you're lucky enough to get the heater working, it'll burn every hair right off your ankle. It's like driving around with a flamethrower on the floorboard. The stiff frost system is your breath in a rag. You know, I just was tearing a horn. You know, people are like looking around. What, you know? Anyway, I realized at some point they're laughing. Holy cow, I'm getting laughs on truth and on angst. And that's when it hit me that comedy was truth and angst. And people, if they can relate to your truth and your angst, they'll laugh about it because we laugh at pain in America. I mean, it's tragedy plus time is the definition of comedy.
Is your comedy, are you interacting more with the crowd or you have a standard set that you do?
I do a standard set. Years ago, more than one occasion, I almost got beat up, you know, by people. And
really?
I realized, you know, I don't know if it was my attitude or just. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I think, you know, I do an hour and a half pretty much every night. So I could take 10 minutes in there and just start talking to the crowd.
Yeah. Then do you have a good heckler story, Jeff?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I had a guy, it was his girlfriend or wife or girlfriend was sitting in front of him. She's laughing. He's glaring at me the whole show, arms crossed. So he goes to the bathroom and he comes back and I said, boy, I sure hope you peed that attitude out of yourself. And he gives me the finger and he points at me. So then of course, I go, what's it like going out with a time bomb? This guy must be a joy to be with.
No.
Oh, he was just livid. And he waited around in the parking lot for 45 minutes, pacing like a caged cat. I told the club owner, I'm not going out there. He's a heck of a lot more motivated than I am. I'm not going to roll in the parking lot with some idiot.
All right, Steph, I'm going to test you again here. What is your favorite book of all time?
Obviously, it's the Bible, Kevin.
Yes.
Nailed it.
Very good. This time you didn't say the book we wrote called You Met Her Where.
But it's still a really good book.
That is true.
And it would make a great gift for friends or relatives on their birthday or for Christmas.
Friends, you can order your copy of our book titled You Met Her Where at kevinandsteph.com. And we will make sure to personally sign a copy for you or whoever you want.
And as always, thank you for listening to Tell Us a Good Story.
So, Jeff, being labeled as a clean comic, is that like having a scarlet letter in the comedy world? Or do people even care? Like, if you're funny, you're funny. Like, how does that work?
Well, I don't think we promoted it for years. We never promoted it as a clean show. We just promoted it as very funny. It's a funny show. Mm-hmm. And it's funny doing corporate. I'll have people come over and go, holy cow, you didn't swear once. That's amazing. I mean, I was, you know, and I go, yeah, my wife would punch me if I,
you know. Was that a conscious effort to come out as a clean comic, or were you, you know, not clean at the beginning and then decided to switch roles?
Well, I write about this in our book. Our fourth grade son, we got called to school because he cussed at his teacher. So, you know, we're sitting as parents across. She couldn't even repeat what he said. She was embarrassed to say it. And I said, I'd love to look you in the eye and tell you I have no idea where that child heard that kind of language. So anyway, driving home, we kind of had a conversation. He said, it's not really attractive when your fourth grade son repeats. So we decided to make an effort and lead by example. And then I wondered if I could clean up my show. I'm a storyteller. And it really made me a better storyteller to get a thesaurus out. My material was kind of what I'm doing now. It was just laced with profanity. Mm-hmm. And then I read a quote, I think it was Eugene Debs said, that profanity gives people permission not to hear what you have to say. And I really think about a year and a half later, I committed my life to Christ. And I'm sorry, the ball squeaking. Did you hear that?
We did.
Yeah, that's our dog.
You have a dog?
She just loves balls. And she wants to know why you don't want to talk to her.
Okay, next fun fact. All right, Jeff has performed for a lot of corporate events, like you just mentioned, such as Sam's Club, Chick-fil-A. He's also performed for our troops, Steph, on aircraft carriers and ships in the Indian Ocean.
Mm-hmm.
So, Jeff, what was that experience like then, performing for the troops?
Well, it was the best and the worst. I got my son to come with me to Bahrain.
Okay.
We flew across the world, and he was in high school at the time. So to travel with my son and land on an aircraft carrier, the downside was it was a warship. We had just invaded Afghanistan. So the ship was sending night ops out to Afghanistan for bombing missions. Whoever put me on that ship did probably lost their job. They were not happy that two civilians were on a warship. They were not happy about it. And it was hard, difficult shows. I mean, they put a microphone in the cafeteria and just said, start doing your comedy. I mean, they're in line getting food. So my son said to me that after the first show, he goes, I've never seen you bomb like this. I go, well, get used to it because I have a feeling it's going to be like this all week. But we did get helicoptered off to a cruiser ship, and they never get entertainment, ever. So I was treated like a king. The captain of the ship gave me his quarters for the night, and we worked the cafeteria for there, but they were all seated facing the stage. And just great audience, just really appreciative. And then we did a show at a secret base, and it was the Air Force. And I told my son, you need to join the Air Force. They had air conditioning, wood floors. They had chefs. Even the Navy told him to join the Air Force. They got all the money and all the toys. So, and then my son joined the Army probably a year and a half later. So,
did he really?
Yeah, he'd served 6 years with the 101st. Airborne, and we're proud of his service.
Good for him.
Oh, God bless him. Do you think your tour had anything to do with that?
Yeah, he wanted to quit school after 9/11. He came to us and said, I'm joining the Army. I said, you're finishing school. And then, believe me, the war's not going anywhere. And he signed up right away. Hey, Tammy just reminded me of, I opened for James Brown.
Really?
At the Ryman. Did the set, you know, get off. James Brown hits the stage. Never saw him perform before. The most awesome 20-minute opening I've ever heard. Had a complete brass section. He's 72, and he's dancing, sweat flying, and he's ha, 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 ha. you know, singing. And I mean, it was church. Everybody was on their feet. It's the rhyming. They're stomping. They're cheering. And at 20 minutes, he says, you know, whatever he said, he can't understand a word he said. And then he leaves. And some kid comes out and does a torn and restored newspaper trick. I mean, you talk about letting the air out of a room.
Right.
It was the most surreal thing. We're all looking at each other. I mean, you could see the back load behind the paper. He's tearing and he's doing. I mean, it was just totally out of place. You know. So my manager says to me, he goes, it's a good thing you gave up the magic because it really doesn't play well.
Yeah. How would you follow that?
All right, Steph, final fun fact. Mm-hmm. Jeff's second book titled Are We There Yet? Shot to number one on Amazon's bestseller list the day it was released on September 5th. So, Jeff, can you tell us more about this book? Because I love how open and honest you are, what you went through, right, to just even save your marriage. So can you tell us more about this book?
Well, the book opens. You know, I proposed for at the Cleveland Airport baggage claim because I wanted the reader to fall in love with my romantic side. You know, I was on a red eye and decided I wanted to ask her to marry me. I had no ring, no plan. I asked her, I said, you know, I love you. She had a two-year-old, Aaron. I adopted him. But anyway, I said, you want to get married? And she, pardon me? I said, you want to get married? You and I. So she knew who I was talking about. And she thought about it. And this is a direct quote. Yeah, I guess if that's what you want, you know, and we were engaged. That was it. Believe me, if I could do it again, it would be completely different. So anyway, we left and got married. We didn't know each other. We met in November. I asked her to marry me in April and she got pregnant in May. We got married in July and I went from single and traveling 50 weeks a year to married and two kids inside a year, drinking, drugging. We moved to Boston and about a year into that, you know, I share this in the book. This is one of the things we talked about AGT, because my father asked me what got me sober. What was the catalyst for alcoholics to quit drinking? Something profound has to happen. Usually, I mean, if life is good, you're not going to quit drinking. So I spanked my 6-month-old in the crib and Tammy came in the room and took him away from me, looked at me and said, who does this? Mm-hmm. And took him in the room and sat on the end of the bed and fed him. And, the shame that washed over me was just overwhelming. And the next day she took me to AA and they said, pray. I said, to what? Certainly wouldn't believe in God. And they said, we'll find something to pray to. I wanted to stay sober. That night with my son scared me. I mean, scared me. Okay, what I was capable of. So I wanted to stay sober. I did what I was told. I prayed two particular prayers, the serenity prayer. Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. And then the third step prayer, that's what they call it in the blue book. God, remove me from the bondage of self so that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties so that victory over them, others may bear witness to thy strength, thy power, and thy way of life. And I prayed those prayers every day, multiple times a day. I mean, I was hanging on, you know, like most new recovery people.
You were an atheist at that time.
I was. Correct? I was an atheist. And then, you know, again, the title, Are We There Yet? Comes from, again, you know, if you picture the image of a child in the back seat of a car, you're on a journey with your parents. They're driving. They have an idea of where the destination is, but you have no clue. And you're just constantly asking through the impatience of a child. And that to me was recovery. And that's what we share in the book. You know, Are We There Yet? It's just, am I there? I kept asking therapists. I kept asking sponsors in the program, you know, when am I done? When am I done with recovery? When am I recovered? You know, they kept talking about a layer of an onion, you're peeling an onion back, you know, and all of this. And I go, well, I must have a huge onion because it's just constant, you know? And I think I'd make some progress and then I'd break and smash things and feel like I'm back at square one. And the first half of the book is what we went through as a couple. We moved every 2 years. They're called geographical cures. You know, most people whose marriages are in trouble, they think if we just change locations and it would be better for a little while. You got a new place, you got new people, but then the same old problems come back and then we'd move again. It was about every 2 years. We moved from Boston to New Jersey, twice in New Jersey. Then we moved to Arizona. So we had three moves in 6 years in our marriage. And then it's no coincidence. You know, we fixed our marriage. Christ captured our heart, our home, and we've been in the same house now for 27 years.
I want to know what brought you from atheism. Like, what was that pivotal moment?
Well, they started with the pray to what? They called it a higher power. And I just said, if I'm making up a deity, that makes me delusional. So I started looking, and I went to a therapist after an event. You know, I did some things. I yelled and screamed at my wife, and she sobs. And I put my son to bed. He goes, "Daddy, you win." I go, "What do you mean I win?" He goes, "You yell, mommy cries, you win." Not one of my prouder moments. So I went downstairs and told Tammy, I said, "I'm going to get help." I said, "I don't want to be this way. I got to change, you know?" So I went to a therapist and she put books in my hands. I started reading self-help. And then I eventually wound up on New Age spiritualism, Buddhism. I discounted it as, okay, that's not working. That's not true. That's not. And after 7 years, God put a man in my life that was a Bible-believing Christian, but he had something I wanted. And it wasn't the Bible and it wasn't Christ. It was golf. He was a wealthy businessman who could get me on nice golf courses. So I've always said, God knows your heart. So he, if he had put a pastor in my path, I would have discounted him and said, my father told me to stay away from Christians. And I did. I just, for whatever reason, I had a special place in my heart and animus towards Christians. So I didn't want to talk to him or hear from him. So we're on a golf course. I think I'm reading Ayn Rand now. I said, how do you accumulate wealth? Because I was broke. We were losing our house. We were bankrupt. And I figured, okay, if it's money, then I'll make money. I mean, I'm going to be a capitalist or whatever. I need to make some money. So here's this wealthy businessman. He knows how to make money. And he says, you don't want a lot of money. I go, I don't. He goes, you can't handle what little you have. It would be a burden to you. Besides, you can't even begin to enjoy the creation until you have a relationship with the one who created it. And I thought, wow, that sounds neat. Where'd you read that? He goes, the relationship is Jesus. It's in the Bible. And I went, oh, okay. A couple holes went by. He said something else. I said, that's great. Where'd you read it? He goes, it's in the Bible. I said, stop it with the Bible. And he goes, what do you mean? I go, well, who actually reads the Bible today? I mean, you know, I don't believe in God, let alone God's divine word. That's a little archaic. And he says, well, back up. What's in the Bible you don't think is true? And I said, well, I'm an atheist. I don't really believe in God. And he said, I never read the Bible. He goes, then you're not really an atheist. You're a moron. And it's funny now, but it's like, you know, and he went on to explain to me, you know, it's the most influential book in the history of the world. Western civilization is certainly the moral foundation of our civilization is built on that book. And you can't even crack it open. I mean, it's lazy and moronic. So at least open it, study it, and then come to some conclusion that you don't believe it. But for gosh sakes, to ignore it is foolish. So he signed me up for some Bible tapes from a church in Texas, Tom Nelson's church, Denton Bible. And I collected them for about a year, maybe over a year, never opened one up. And we had a really good friendship, mostly around golf, politics, and what guys talk about. And he ended every conversation with, how are you and Tammy doing? We pray for your marriage. And I'd go, why? He goes, well, we'd like to see it succeed. Why? Well, we believe marriages are important to the health of a country. And we just want to see you guys make it. I said, all right, knock yourself out. I don't care. You know, it didn't mean anything to me. And then eventually we were filled out divorce papers. We were 10 minutes from the courthouse to file those papers. We had them notarized. And Tammy has me pull over and she says, this is wrong. Let's go home. And I looked at her and said, you're out. She says, what do you mean? I go, you deserve better than me. I loved her. I did. I just felt I was damaged goods. My brother was like me. My father was like me. I just couldn't stop. Eventually, I'd smash things. And I looked at her. I said, I love you. I really love you, Tim. But you gave me seven years. But I told her straight up, nobody will love those boys as much as I do. But that's what broke my heart more than anything. I would think about, you know, again, as a husband and wife, you know this. You lay in bed, certainly in the early years. When the kids hit a certain age, hey, we can travel together. Just, you know, we can go out by ourselves, do this and do that, and what we were going to do. And all these little plans that you make and you're laying there, I'm, you know, in a hotel by myself and it's just gone. It's gone. The thought of her not being part of my life would just break my heart. And she said, no, let's go home. And I said, if we go home, divorce is off the table. When we got married, we didn't know each other. You've had 7 years to get to know me, and you know what you're getting when we go home. And I said, I'm trying. And again, in the book, you know, are we there yet? I'm not there. And anyway, we go home, and 6 months, I think she just grabs the kids. At this point in my life, I'm having a career crisis. I don't want to do comedy anymore. I have no skill outside of comedy. I mean, I really can't do anything. So she grabs the kids and says, I'm going to Ohio for the summer to my parents' house. Figure out what you want to do with your adult life. If you don't want to do comedy, you got to do something. We're losing the house. We're losing everything. She gathers up all these Bible tapes that have been coming for about a year now. And she says, you're going to listen to these things and throw them out. I said, put them on the floor. I'll listen to them. And again, in God's time. So one day I'm walking by. Nobody's home. I'm lonely. Anyway, I see the tapes and I open one up. And it was Ecclesiastes 1:1. It was meaningless, meaningless. All in life is meaningless. And I said, yes. That was my conclusions after a 7-year search. There's nothing of this earth that's lasting. It doesn't last. And to hear it come from a pastor and out of the Bible, and I thought that was such a deep, profound truth to me. I don't know if there's another chapter in the Bible that would have spoke to me at that moment in my life like that. Mm-hmm. I really don't. And realize, you're right. I bought all the stuff. I got all the stuff, and it just goes to the landfill. That's it. His conclusions at the end of the tape were, life without God will have no meaning. Without meaning, there's no purpose. Without purpose, suicide. And I said, yes. And I ripped open every envelope looking for more Ecclesiastes tapes. And then it got to, I think, one of the sermons, the pastor's conclusion. He said, this is what he's saying. If happiness was an act of human will, we'd all be happy. Solomon says it's not human will. Something outside of us comes inside of us. And then it works its way out into the form of service. We're wired for worship and service, two things. You know, you want to be loved, you have to be loving, and you have to figure out what that looks like. Well, the Bible's very clear in Ephesians what a husband's role is. And I just soaked that book in. Just, she was gone. I had no work. And I listened to just about a year and a half's worth of tapes in 2 or 3 months. And then I was in Texas in August. I started in June. So August, I was at my friend's house. And we went to church, went to Tommy's church. And when we went back to Phil's house, he said, when I met you, God put it on my heart, you were looking for something. Have you found it? And then all I can think to say was, if Jesus is not who he said he was, then Solomon was right. I'm a dead man. And that was 27 years ago, I guess now.
Wow.
It was like overnight. You know, it's almost as if Jesus said, you know, I've always been there just waiting for you. And I had to exhaust all these other things.
So looking back at all the stuff that you wrote, was it hard for your wife to read this book and kind of relive it and you to write it? How hard was that to do?
Well, the last draft I gave to her, I said, you need to read this and be okay with my version of what we went through. And she read the first two chapters and came to me and said, I can't read anymore. We were horrible people. Mm. And I said, that's the beauty if you stick with it. You know, my friend Andy Andrews wrote the foreword. And he caught it. He captured. I called him up. I said, you captured it. You're going to meet two couples in this book. Are we there yet? You're going to meet who we were when we got married. And then you're going to meet who we were after Christ captured our heart and home. And they're two completely different people.
Well, listeners, for more information about Jeff, you can go to his website, jeffallencomedy.com. Also on social media, Instagram, he's Jay Allen Comedy. And on Facebook, he's at Jeff Allen Comedy. Please go to his website and get his new book, Are We There Yet? My Journey from a Messed Up to Meaningful Life. And if you order it from his website, he'll sign it for you at no additional charge.
Oh, that's awesome.
Which is fantastic. And he is currently on tour. His tour is titled Are We There Yet? Which actually, Steph, comes through Columbus.
Oh,
in January. Oh. So Jeff, we're in Columbus, Ohio. We obviously, we will need to get ticket stuff to that when he's
very
here in town.
Fun. I love that.
Yeah, I usually do the Funny Bone once a year there. I don't know if that's the venue or not, if we're doing a church in Columbus.
It is. It's the Funny Bone.
Great. Yeah, it's one of my favorite venues.
Well, Jeff, thank you so much for writing this book.
Yes.
Right? I appreciate
so important.
Your open, being open and honest, because that's going to be incredibly helpful to a lot of marriages. So thank you for doing that. And thank you for saying yes to us.
Oh, you're welcome, man. I had a blast.
Thanks, Jeff.
Did I stop bleeding? I'm done bleeding.
You're done bleeding. It's all done.
I'm healed.
Friends, thank you for listening to this episode of Tell Us a Good Story.
For additional content and longer episodes, you can go to our website at kevinandsteph.com or wherever you like to listen to podcasts.
And don't forget, you can catch us every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 10 a.m. right here on the AM/FM 24/7 network. Thank you for listening to
Tell Us a Good Story.